This is the Outsource Accelerator Podcast, exploring business and outsourcing mastery. Let's do it. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Outsource Accelerator Podcast. My name is Derek Gallimore, and this is episode number 134. So today we get Chris Urbano back of Winery Philippines. This is a super interesting conversation. We have spoken to him before in episode number 128 and 131, where we look at his history and his past, and he's grown up pretty much in Southeast Asia, despite being of Australian origin. Huge amounts to learn from Chris. Today we deep dive a little bit into what I thought was the future of the Philippines from a kind of commercial and economic point of view, but it turns more into a political observation and a fascinating conversation. So I'm sure you'll get a lot out of this. I certainly did myself. If you want to get in touch with Chris or know any more, then go to our show notes at outsourceaccelerator.com/134. Enjoy. Hi, and welcome back, everybody. Today we are joined by Chris Urbano again of Winery Philippines. Hi, Chris. How are you?
Hi, Derek. Great. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you. And we have spoken to Chris before about his journey in Southeast Asia, both sort of lifestyle and commercially, and also his journey with Winery Philippines. So I encourage you to listen to those. I just wanted to tap Chris's vast experience in terms of like the commercial aspects of Southeast Asia and the Philippines to really see where he thinks it's going from here, and both the opportunities and the downsides, I suppose. So thanks for joining us, Chris. Do you want to maybe just quickly introduce yourself and how you came to be here?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Chris Urbano. I'm the Chief Sommelier and Managing Director of Winery Philippines, which is a curated wine marketplace online, bringing great wines from around the world and putting them in the hands of Filipino consumers at the best possible prices, best quality, and best convenience. And how did I get here? I've been based in the Philippines for the last 4 years. Loved the idea of getting into e-commerce at a time that's really booming Southeast Asia, and at a time where I guess we're also seeing very strong growth in interest in high quality food and beverage across the region, and including in the Philippines. So we sort of are sitting at a nexus of a smart macro opportunity. Being an Australian with deep experience of working in Southeast Asia, I'm somebody who can go after that opportunity quite effectively, and obviously I love the I love the product, so I find myself at the nexus of good business and passion.
Fantastic. And you have you were educated in Indonesia, you've had stints in Australia, your family's back in Australia, but you're choosing to spend time in the Philippines. You see that there's good opportunity here, but do you think that it's always been the case, and that the Southeast Asia is developing but never really makes it? Do you think that the Philippines is still developing but might not make it in another 20, 30 years? Or do you think that there is a turning point here because of the rise of technology and the sort of, reduction of geographic borders, in that the Philippines really could modernize now and become an economic player in the world?
Gee, there's a lot in that question, isn't there?
It's a long one.
Yeah. And there's the commercial mindset, and then there's the political mindset and what's going on there. I mean, I might start with, do I think the Philippines will go on to be a success over the next, say, 10 or 20 year time frame? I think my answer to that would be I think the opportunity for the Philippines is limited to really become a successful economic player. And I come at that lens more from a political standpoint that, this is still a country that, democratic trappings aside, is fundamentally a landed feudal oligarchy. If you were actually to categorize it politically, that would be what the Philippines is. They do hold elections, every a few years, but they're largely a game of musical chairs between the incumbent elite. And the challenge that puts on an economy is that you've got these basically 100 families or so who control much of the economy. They're largely rent seekers in the economy who through their control of land and the commanding heights of the economy, high prices on pretty much everything, and there's extremely limited opportunity for people from outside of those elite circles to actually put up viable competitive businesses against them. So that tends to stifle most economies, and yet you're seeing this very fast pace of economic growth in the Philippines. And what's happening is, despite, this control over the, domestic economy, the two big drivers of Philippine growth comes down to one thing, which is the ability of Filipinos to speak English very well, which has meant that there's now, upwards of 10 million Filipinos abroad, many of them who are temporary overseas workers and remitting funds back to the Philippines, which is driving consumption here. And the second big lever, of course, is the BPO sector, where onshore Filipinos are effectively being employed outside the Philippines, but without leaving the country. And that is contributing to the Philippine tax base and purchasing power and growing middle class here. So it's almost at the moment, I would describe the Philippines as experiencing some level of economic success by virtue of the fact that it can export its labor and has exported its labor so successfully. But outside of that part of the economy, when you look at the sort of the fundamental domestic economy of the Philippines, it's in a fairly woeful state, even by Southeast Asian standards. And I hold very little hope at this point of reform of the Philippine economy in the short term, because it does in fact require a full reform of the Philippine political structures for that to take place.
Yeah, and on that sort of note of the kind of feudal families and the kind of land holdings and things, I don't know if you've read How Asia Works, which is a book by Joe Studwell, but apparently it's a favorite book of Bill Gates, and it really describes and highlights about nine countries in Southeast Asia and compares and contrasts them. And unfortunately, that book holds the Philippines as the kind of case example of how things unfortunately haven't panned out, and how the country is controlled by, as you say, 100 key families, and they have really all of the land holdings, all of the land rights, and then from there it obviously stifles any true economic development or true meritocracy, which is stifling. Have you read that book? It's a fascinating book, actually.
No, I've not read the book, but and I'll look it up, of course. But I think the point you touched on about stifling the meritocracy is absolutely spot on. I mean, this is a market where the elite would rather the pie shrink before they give up their large shares of it, and as opposed to sort of being still winners in a rapidly expanding pie, they're choosing to basically control it, and that's been the case throughout history in most societies, and in Europe. A lot of this was dealt with. I mean, the French Revolution comes to mind, and actually when people ask what the Philippine political structure looks like, I say it actually looks like pre-revolutionary France more than anything, the main reason there's not been a serious revolution here, I think, is that they have had this sort of pressure valve where they can release all of the middle class dissidents to basically go and work abroad, and that's meant that you've not seen the formation of a strong middle class, lower class movement to really reset the status quo in the Philippines. Those people who could be the start of an opposition have basically all just taken the route of migration, which has been fairly readily available to them.
Do you think with the French Revolution, I mean, the times are very different now. I think that information control has really a lot of power. And now with the advent of technology and internet, you can't stymie information and knowledge transfer and things like that. And so as a result, you're getting more kind of middle class uprisings because they don't sort of tolerate the top taking all the wealth. But also, and I'm a sort of proponent of this, but I really believe that the breaking down of borders and the relevance of geography through technology and through information sharing and transfer, which of course the internet does and outsourcing does, it really levels the playing field. And as a result, do you think that in sort of 20 years of maybe burgeoning or growing professional opportunities for people here sitting in the Philippines but servicing Western companies, it could actually tip the pyramid upside down or potentially head that way?
Yeah, and it's a great question. I mean, I think the short answer would be yes, it's possible, but you know, you'd need very large, I think, cohorts and fairly fast growth of the onshore middle class. And I think the biggest challenge to the Philippines, you know, if you look at, you know, I think you were referencing perhaps the Arab Spring and some of the even political dissension you're starting to see in China, despite their best efforts to control information there. You know, in the Philippines, yes, internet information is widely available, but I think the power of that information, it needs to be in the hands of people who are educated and in a position to actually exercise political will. And what's happened with the Philippines with labor migration out is that the middle class is more or less hollowed out. So anybody who's the people who leave, if you're an elite, you don't want to leave the Philippines because your life here is fantastic. You know, you have a great life. If you're in the Philippine professional class, though, you are chronically underpaid and in a system that is fundamentally unfair, and that you can never actually improve your lot. So it's the B and upper C of the Philippines who have an education but a lack of opportunity and reward who all leave. And what you're left with in the Philippines then is basically the elite, and then the DE masses who, you know, work 14 hours a day, have no capacity or I guess household resources to be politically active, and in many cases even lack the education to see that they are, by supporting their, you know, patrons and the oligarchs, they're actually I guess voting against their long-term class interests. So I think that's really the challenge you've got here, and the question is the one sector of the economy onshore that is growing, I think, really is BPO and servicing external, because the elite know that they can't stick their hands in that honeypot, so they're happy to let that grow and actually support Philippine growth, but then they, you know, plunder through the tax base. But the question is that one sector enough to, I guess, form a politically active middle class? And we'll see. I mean, you know, there's it is growing quickly. You know, will it save the Philippines in 10 or 20 years? Maybe not. I think two things need to happen, though. I think one is that industry needs to continue growing, developing, and churning out people with the money to be independent of a patron and to be politically active. And I think we do at some point need to see the return of Filipinos who are offshore. And I don't know what the catalyst is for them to return, but I have some optimism, noting that many Filipinos have now been abroad for 20 or 30 years. The big migration really started in the 80s, and I think there's growing signs that a lot of Filipinos have sort of spent their careers working in North America or the UK or Australia, but they're seeing the Philippines as a retirement destination, and I'm hopeful that they'll start to return with higher expectations of democracy, public service, and a strong independence from the elite, given the time they've spent out and their independent sources of wealth.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? I mean, just kind of looking at the numbers, trying to add everything up as you talk, but the OFWs, like the overseas workers and the migrant workers, they contribute about 10% to the country's GDP. Outsourcing contributes equally about 10% to GDP. The national productivity is really racing at the moment, isn't it? You know, it's kind of year-on-year growth of about 6 to 7%, which is kind of leading the region, which, you know, I would assume the majority of that is coming from these two sectors. It is, as you say, it would be interesting to then maybe track it over the next 20 years and see if these sort of sectors do continue to grow, the country continues to grow, and that then lifts up the middle class. And yeah, it's funny about the sort of the uprisings and the Filipinos. I think potentially to the detriment, they're kind of quite agreeable and very potentially passive people, aren't they? So they're probably not that inclined to have uprisings so much. But also, I do find, you know, very much to their credit, they're highly patriotic, highly you know, nationalistic, and really do love and care for the Philippines. It's not like a lot of these migrant workers are happy to leave and then sort of grateful to see the back of the Philippines. There is a huge amount of loyalty to their country and to their culture and to I suppose the betterment of their people. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, well, I mean, it's certainly if you say anything in social media praising the Philippines, you'll get a million shares. And if you say anything negative about the Philippines, you'll get a million shares. So it is still a highly engaged diaspora, and I think they do fundamentally care. But I think it comes back to, you know, individual choices and, you know, ultimately political change and political activism is an incredibly hard path to walk. You know, you typically in the early days of any movement, you run the risk of being ostracized, of being, you know, in the Philippines, being beaten, taken into custody, you know, being stripped of all opportunity, and basically you can get killed. So when you and that's no joke. I mean, if you look at the martial law years, and certainly the last few years in the Philippines under Duterte, I mean, if you are in opposition to the government here, you're running a serious risk of being locked up or killed by the state. So I sort of come back to, I mean, I think that it's possibly less that they're agreeable and more that that people make that choice of, well, if I've got a choice of migrating to the US and just basically living in the suburbs in San Diego and having a good job and being able to have a peaceful life and family versus do I want to get involved in a political revolution in the Philippines, it's an easy choice and one that I think has been enabled by globalization in the 21st century, whereas you look back 300 years ago, if you were a discontent middle and lower class in Europe, I mean, it wasn't that easy to just leave the country. You had to do something about it. Whereas here, you've got a choice, and I think most of them are making the, you know, I have to admit, I think they're making the smart choice.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? And as we discussed in the last episode, I think it was, you know, you're seeing sort of freer migration, but also you're seeing freer autonomy in terms of where you can earn your income now. And, you know, there's potential that people can actually slip off the grid in the Philippines. They could maybe buy a little bit of land in a province somewhere, and they could earn $100,000 a year by coding for someone sitting in Silicon Valley. You know, it's kind of a fascinating, it'll be an interesting kind of trip over the next 10, 20 years, right? As I think like technology kind of increasingly removes borders and increases kind of migrational flexibility. It's going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah, no, I'm a patient observer, I would describe myself that. Like, I very much hope that some of these trends start to crack this oligarchy. But I suppose having been here for 4 or 5 years now, I describe my view as one of limited optimism.
Right. Fantastic. Well, I really appreciate that. I didn't actually expect to launch fully into kind of a political observation, but I that's incredible insight. And Chris, you you are a management consultant. You do some consultancy work. You're launching or have, you know, successfully launched Winery Philippines. If anyone wants to get in touch with you at all, how can they do that?
Oh, sure. So the best way to reach me, drop me a line anytime at chris@winery.ph, and you know, I can help you think about doing business in the Philippines from a consultancy standpoint, as you mentioned, and I can also sell you a great bottle of wine or have you join us as one of our cabinos or wine subscribers and get great wine into your hands every month if you happen to live here in the Philippines.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time, Chris.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Derek. Have a great day. Bye.
That was Chris Urbano of Winery Philippines. If you want to get in touch with Chris, then, of course, please do so. Go to our show notes at outsourceaccelerator.com/134 for all of the details. And, of course, if you want to ask us anything, then just drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.